Hello again, this is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour again. And tonight we're live, and this is my last live show for a month. Well, I'm going out of the country again. And everybody's saying, well, you just got back. I was gone the whole month of August to Europe. You know, I was in London, Paris, and Moscow, and then I had to return to Moscow a few weeks later. But I was really supposed to be in China right now. I was supposed to have left about the middle of October to go to China and Taiwan. But that part of the trip fell through. I was going to do a class in Hong Kong, and we were trying to get people signed up for it, and it just wasn't working out. There wasn't enough people. And so it was going to cost too much to go over there and then backtrack around the rest of the trip. I was supposed to meet with my publisher in Taiwan because, you know, my books are now in Chinese, and I was really looking forward to that. But that's a long trip for the whole month, and it was going to be trying to get one of these round the world, or what they call a Circle Pacific, that's what they call it, tickets. But it was still very expensive. But we couldn't get the numbers for the Hong Kong class, so we had to cancel that part. So we're keeping the rest of the trip. So I'll be leaving on Election Day to go to Hawaii first. I'm going to like to break up these long trips because that's a long way to hop over the water. And I'll be giving a class in Kona on the Big Island. So if anybody there is interested, there's still room, and the class will be this next week when I get there. But we'll be doing one of my classes in Kona on the Big Island, and then right after that, I go to Australia and New Zealand, and I'll be gone the entire month of November, and I'll be giving classes in Perth and in Sydney again. And the ones in Perth, I'm also going to be doing talks. I'm going to be doing seminars in Perth and one in Sydney, but this is the first time I'm going to be doing also what we're calling an advanced or a level 2 class. I'm doing one in Perth, and then I'll be doing one in Sydney, as well as a normal hypnosis class that I always do. And this is my first time to try the advanced class and the level 2 because people kept asking for it. My normal hypnosis classes, I have to do the basics and give people the information so they can learn to do what I do. But there still is a whole bag of tricks that I've never shared with any of these students. And I've done so many classes now all over the world that some of them are running into problems, and I get emails from some of the students with the different things they're having problems with. And we try to answer the emails as best we can. But there's a lot of it that can be helped if I gave them more information, some of the tricks that I've learned in the 30 years I've been doing this. And it's still an evolving thing because as I do these sessions, I'm still learning and things are still changing. So we're doing one in Perth before I do the regular hypnosis class. Now, the level 2 class is only for those who have taken my class before, because the idea is to act as a refresher and to discuss how to work with difficult cases and to learn some different parts of the technique that will be I'm going to share with them. And then we'll have the normal class in Perth. And then I go down to Sydney and have another level 2 down there for the ones that took the class last year. And we had some students that came from Hong Kong, Singapore, and Malaysia, so I'm hoping maybe they'll come down to learn some more of the techniques. But then after I get through in Sydney with the regular class, I go to back to New Zealand, and I'll be doing the same thing in Wellington. I'll be doing lectures there with Blair, you know, Blair Styra, that I had on my show before. He's a wonderful psychic, and he channels the entity called Tabash. And he has a big following there in Wellington, and we have up to 200 people at his normal sessions. So I'll be doing a lecture with him. We did it last year, and it was very well received. So I'm going to do that. And then I will do, again, a level two class for those students in New Zealand and a regular hypnosis class. Then it's a circle, so I go back up to Auckland then and do a conference up there before I head back to the States. So I'll be back here in the States about the first part of December. It's so funny because right now it's still warm here in Arkansas. And then when I leave, you know, we're going to Hawaii where it'll be hot. And then this is summertime in Australia and New Zealand. I get back here in December, we're going to be headed into winter. And that's going to feel real funny. I'm going to come back here and it's going to be cold. But this is the time of the year then when I don't make any more trips. I stay home until about February. So I'm going to be out of town for a while. But anybody in Australia and New Zealand who are interested in these classes, we have already got a huge number for the first class that are going to take the class for the first time, but we can always squeeze some more in. But anyone who is interested in the Australia classes, contact Patricia Hamilton with Conscious Living Magazine. She is the one who is putting all this together for me over there. Patricia Hamilton with Conscious Living Magazine, and she's in Perth. You go on my website, we have all the contact numbers, and the Sydney class especially is just beginning to enroll. People are just beginning to sign up for that one. That's the end of, toward the end of November, before we go on to Wellington. And the ones in New Zealand have to contact some other people that are on our website. But if you go to the website, you'll have all the information about these classes. These will be the last ones this year. Now, I've got several set up for next year, including going back to Moscow. I'm starting a regular routine of going there and do some advanced some classes there with an academy. All right. So anyway, if you're interested in the classes, check out my website, and the name of my company is Ozark Mountain Publishing. So it's abbreviated on our website, www.ozarkmt.com. Or if you're overseas, it's ozarkmt.com. And you can find out all about where I'm going to be, where the talks are going to be, and everything. And I always have a big following and like a big crowd, and I really love that, to interact with all you people out there. Okay, before I get into the talk tonight, let me give out the toll-free number in case anyone wants to call in. And you might want to tonight, because I'm going to get into some controversial stuff, and you may want to throw in your 2 cents. But I don't have a guest tonight, it's just me. So the toll-free number is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. Anybody who wants to just jump in and ask questions. I wasn't really sure what I was going to talk about tonight, but, you know, I've always got something I can talk about. There's a lot of my books, even, that I haven't really gone over. But last Sunday night, I did a show on a rival network, I guess you would say. I don't know if we're competitors or not, but it's on another network out there that is an internet show. And I think it's called UFO Radio. I'm not sure, but it has mostly to do with UFOs. I did a show for them. I agreed to do it because Tim Crawford is an old friend of mine, and he's one of the producers, and he asked me to do the show. Well, it was an hour-long show, and they wanted me to start out with basics in case people didn't know what past life regression was, if they didn't know anything about hypnosis. So it took a while to get into it. And then about, maybe over halfway through the show, we got into UFOs. And it seems like that is one of their main interests. But one thing that really bothered me was their attitude or their viewpoint on UFOs and ETs and abductions. They have the idea that this is all negative and people are being hurt and that it's a totally different viewpoint than what I have come through with all of my years of working with this. Because those of you that know that I've been working with hypnosis for 40 years and 30 years in past life regression, but 20 years I've been spent working with on UFOs and ETs, doing the research as an investigator. I've done the crop circle investigations. I've done it all. And I know all of the people in the field. And I speak at every UFO conference in the world. And I go back again and again. I've written 4 books on this subject. And the main one is called The Custodians. And in that book, I go through my 20 years of working with the UFOs and the ETs and from the beginning and how it evolved. So I was able to find out every answer anybody could possibly want to know about UFOs, why they're here, why it's all happening. To me, it makes so much sense. And there is no fear unless we create it. It's all positive. That's what I've found. I've never found any negativity. And on the show, these people were bringing up, they had call-ins, and people were bringing up a lot of negativity. And it bothered me because we were getting almost to the end of the show and people were calling in with all of these questions. And I kept saying, some of these questions, I said, how many more hours have we got? Because it would take too long to go into the answers. But I don't like it when people are getting, to me, this is misinformation, that they're being led to think all of this is negative. And I know the names of Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs was mentioned on the show. Now, I know Bud. He's a good friend of mine. David Jacobs, I've never had any contact with him, but I do know of his work. Now, first of all, I respect everybody's work out there. I know all the people that are on the lecture circuit. I respect their work. It's their work. I would never try to discredit. I would never try to argue with them or to go against it because that's their work. That's their, all their effort has gone into writing their books and they believe in what they're doing. It's just that they are aimed more toward negativity. And I have not found it. This is one of the things I wanted to make clear. A lot of the other investigators, if the ones that are hypnotists, are working at a light level of trance. And the people who come to see them have a lot of fear. They have had an experience that really frightens them, and they're trapped up in that emotion. Well, most of the investigators don't know how to get them past the emotion, get the conscious mind out of the way. So they are caught in that emotion, and that's what they carry into the session. And, of course, there's fear. But in my technique that I've developed and the one that I teach, the main idea is to get the conscious mind totally out of the picture so it can't interfere, it can't argue, it can't convince the person another way. You get the conscious mind out of the picture and go directly to the subconscious mind, what I call the subconscious, and you get the truth because the conscious mind isn't in there with its distortions. Now, when I've been doing this, you know, when I say they, the ones who I work with, the ones who come through the people I work with, I don't channel. These are all people, my clients, and the same information comes through them time and time again. And when I was working with the ETs and UFOs, the ETs were coming through the people because I was able to get the conscious mind interference out of the way. Now, these are the people that are coming through these people, not the client themselves. When I say they, I'm referring to, in this case, the ETs. In another work, it was the subconscious, but the ETs come through and they've been giving me the answers to any information I wanted to know. And in the beginning, it was quite startling, but then I got used to it, and I got used to talking to them, and I trusted them because they said I was going to be like their PR person to help get the truth out to the world. and that was what they wanted me to know. They said that the ideal situation should be that the person never remember anything about the experience. There are, I don't know how many, thousands and thousands of people all over the world who have been having contact and having experiences. This has been going on since the beginning of the world. They've always been here. That's why I called my title of my book, The Custodians. They're here to take care of us. And in my other book, Keepers of the Garden, we are the garden, and they've been taking care of us since the beginning of time. Now, they have been watching us. Sometimes they're called the Watchers. They have been taking care of us for so long that they don't want us to remember these things because that's not part of the plan. They're just here to watch and observe and take care of us and monitor our bodies. But they said the ideal situation would be that the person never remember anything. But they don't have any control over that anymore because they said it's the pollutants in the air, our additives in our food. If the person is on drugs of any kind, prescription drugs or other kinds of recreational drugs, or if they're on alcohol, all of these things distort the chemistry of the brain. It interferes with the chemistry of the brain. This means that the person, when they have had an experience and they are remembering bits and pieces of it, either with what they think is a memory or a dream, they are actually remembering the experience in a distorted fashion because it's coming through that filter of the brain chemistry. So they're remembering what they think happened, and here again it's colored with fear and emotion. Fear is the strongest emotion that a human has. They don't understand something, they're afraid of it, and they color it with fear. You bring in fear, and this will change the perception. They're afraid, they're emotional, they don't understand what's going on or what has happened, so they naturally bring in this very strong emotion. Now, a lot of these other investigators, especially the ones I've talked to, say they keep them at that state, which is a lighter level. Well, the person is going through hypnosis. They're going to remember it as this distorted memory with the emotions and the fear involved. And I talked to him one time. I says, why don't you take them into the deeper level? When I work in the somnambulistic level, when you get in that level, the conscious mind is gone, and they become the other personality, and the information can flow freely, and you can get to the truth. That's what I work with. And I said, why don't you take them into the deeper levels to find out what's really happening? And the one hypnotist said, I don't want to do that. He said, I'm terrified enough of what I'm finding at the light levels. I'm afraid if I go into the deep levels, it'll really be awful. So they're afraid of what they're finding. Now, if they're afraid of their own work, they are drawing this negativity toward them, and it's definitely coloring what they are getting. But I try to explain, no, you're going to get the truth. But they don't really understand that. I have worked with some of the same people that other investigators have worked with, and by taking them deeper, we get a totally different story. And the person wakes up and they say, if that's what happened, I can live with that because it makes sense. I've had people at my lectures start crying, and I said, well, I hope I'm not offending you. And they'll say, no, for the first time, it makes sense. And they don't have to be afraid. They can take that fear out of the picture. But trying to think of some of the things that were said on the air that they didn't understand at all. One of them said, oh, then we're just a bunch of lab rats. You know, they're experimenting on us, and we're just a bunch of lab rats with no control over this and no free will. That's totally wrong. That is the last thing that is happening out there. we have free will. They respect that. They will never violate that because that is one of the main rules of the universe. I don't know if I should start at the beginning or what here, because I'm trying to figure out how best to put this in place. But I will tell you that nobody has had an experience without their agreement. Now, that is one of the things a lot of people argue with me about. They'll say, what do you mean? I never agreed to have this happen to me. I didn't want to be experimented on. I didn't want to be abducted in the middle of the night and taken on board a ship. I don't want all of this stuff happening to me and my family. But nothing ever happens without your permission. And they've told me this over and over again. They will not break that rule of free will. But when you're on the other side, whenever you have died from a life and you have gone into the spirit side, after the spirit side, when you're there, you're going over the lives you've just left, and I've talked about this before, you are going into karma, trying to figure out what you owe other people, and you are making your contracts with all of these other people. You make your plan. You're going to come back with these people. Let's go back and do it again. Let's see if we can fix it this time. We didn't do such a good job last time. You be the husband, I'll be the wife, and see if that works. You be the mother, I'll be the child. You can move the roles around any way you want because it's just a play anyway. You're making your plan. You're making up your contracts with all of the other people that you're hoping to work things out with. Okay, when you're in that planning stage, there is boards over there, boards and councils and elders and masters that help you to make your decisions and plan your next life as best you can, because with free will, anything can change once you get down here. So you're making your plan. The ETs and the ones who are involved in their own program come to you when you're making the plans and you're at the planning table and you're trying to draw up your contracts. They say, this is what we're going to be involved with during your lifetime when you come back. This is our program. Do you want to be involved? And you always agree. You're never made to do anything against your will. Over there, everything looks so simple. You look at it and you say, oh, yeah, I can do that, no problem. That's why we say when we're over there, we're looking at emotions and everything, and we say, oh, yeah, love, hate, envy, jealousy, I can do that, no problem. Being human is easy, but you don't find out until you get down here that it's not that easy. There's a lot more complicated. It's much more complicated than you could imagine. So when you're drawing up your plan and the ETs say, this is our program we're going to be involved with and it's very important to the future of the world. Do you want to be a part of it? You'll say, yeah, that sounds interesting. I'll do it. But then you get down here and you're in the middle of it and you say, wait a minute, I didn't plan this. I didn't agree to this. But actually you did. They say, the problem is that, you know, when we come into this life, we forget everything we agreed to. That's what I've said before, when you come into the life, the blinders come down. You forget everything that you plan to do. You forget your contracts. You come in totally ignorant. And it was like, well, why does that happen? I asked them one time, wouldn't it be easier if we knew what we'd agreed to, if we knew our connections with other people? Wouldn't that make it easier? They said, no, it wouldn't be a test if you knew the answers. So we have to come in with all memory erased so that we can go through the school of Earth. Now, they said that's the difference, that whenever they make contracts with people, they remember them, they hold to them, they don't violate them. They said the problem with you humans is you make a contract and then you come to Earth and you forget all about it. So here we are trying to fulfill our contract and our deal, and you don't remember it, and you think you're being violated. That's the difference. We make an agreement, and then we forget about it when we get down here. Now, they said because free will is involved, if once somebody, Doug gets here, and they're in the middle of all of this with the ETs, and they don't like it, they want to get out, they're angry, and they said that's the last thing we want. We don't want that kind of an attitude. We don't want anger into this program and resistance. If you find you can't take it, you don't want to be a part of it, they said all you have to do is tell us, I want to break my contract, tear up my contract, I don't want to be a party to this, because that's not the kind of people that they want in the program. All you have to do is tell them that. It's that simple. But once you're in the program, there are so many wonderful things that can happen that you're not even aware of. It goes far, far beyond the experimentations. You eventually begin to get to where you can go to the schools and to learn so many, many things. These wonderful schools that are on the Mothercraft, where you can learn things beyond your wildest comprehension. And there's a lot of things like that that we don't remember, but it's all very important to you. I've had people come to me for these sessions and say they were little kids and they remembered every night going on board the craft for training, for a lesson. And they said they were being taught things that only Einstein would know, very complicated concepts. But this one man said, he did this every night, and he remembered. And he thought that all the other kids in the neighborhood were also going to these schools at night and being taught. He didn't know that it was something different until he began asking them about it. It just that he remembered what nobody else in the neighborhood did. But he would say, but I saw you on the ship last night, too. You were there at the class. But they didn't remember being there. But a lot of these people carry these concepts in their mind that are very deep scientific information that will come into use as we go through the shift and go into the new Earth. Anyway, this is the main thing to realize, that no experience has ever happened with them that you did not agree to. And they take the utmost care to make sure that you're taken care of during these experiences, and they try to block the memories as best they can because they know the way the human mind works and the way it can distort things. So they really try to not allow the person to have these kind of distorted memories. But they said because of the way the human mind and the chemistry of the brain works, it's not always effective. And they regret that, but there's nothing more they can do about it. Okay. Now, in order to understand a lot of this, we have to go back to the very beginning, and I think I've talked about this on the show before, is how, when the Earth was created, every planet, when it gets to the point that it can support life, it has to cool down. And I've had people go back to the very, very beginnings where there was lava and volcanoes erupting and lava everywhere. There was ammonia in the air, poisonous atmospheres, and life could not exist here at those times. So they go back to those times when the Earth is still, maybe before the primeval soup stage. Life could not exist here at that time. So when the planet takes all these eons of time to cool down, the atmosphere finally becomes stable, the oceans begin to cool, and you begin to have the building blocks that will support life. They said that's a very important time in the history of a planet. And in the councils, they keep all the records of the histories of all the planets. And when a planet reaches the point that it can support life, that is such an important time in the history of that planet, it is then given its life charter. And then it is decided, okay, what kind of life will we put there? Now, this has been done since eons. They said this is the way life was formed throughout the universe. And people say, well, how is God involved in all of this? God is very much a part of it. They call him the source. He is the one that gives them instructions and tells them what they are to do, where they are to go, and they spend their entire lives on these craft, going from planet to planet, seeding and taking care of the planets, of the different life forms as they develop. That's their responsibility. And they go from place to place, each different ships having their different parts in the whole plan. Now, they said the first thing they had to do was introduce cells, one-celled organisms. And these cells came from many, many different places throughout the universe. I asked them one time, where did it come from? Where did we begin from? Where did the first cells come from? They said it doesn't make any difference anyway because it's all a combination. DNA has been changed, manipulated around to see what will grow under the different conditions in each place they go to. And so they have to take these cells and get them ready to grow. And they don't care what it forms. The main thing is that one cell begins to divide and to produce into a multi-celled organism. They don't really care at that point what it is going to be. Because if you can get it into a multi-celled organism, it will eventually develop into something. And they said you would be quite surprised as to what you could have looked like. It all depends on what is compatible with the conditions of the planet, of the place it's going to be. And they said you have no idea how fragile life is. There are many times they have started life in different places, and it would begin to form multi-celled organisms, and they'd go back and check on it, and then it would fall apart again, and the planet would be lifeless again. So it's very important when they can get something to begin to grow out of the primeval soup. So eventually, as it went along, plants were formed, water, animals in the water were the first ones. I've written a lot about all these different parts. And eventually, you get to where you can have a mammal. And these things just begin to get to that point, because you have to get to mammals before you can get to an intelligent being. And I've had many people go back to lifetimes when they were involved in this whole process, the entire process. I've had some of them, they said, were called the seeders. They were the ones who did the original seedings of the planet. There were other ones that were called the planters, who took care of the plants as they were growing and beginning to form and making sure everything was going to be the way it should be. You have to have a food source before you have animals and people. So all of this had to be carefully planned out and taken care of. They said in the beginning it was started by the ones they called the archaic ones, or the ancient ones. But they did it because that was how they began. So you can see it goes way, way back into eternity. It's been around for so long, this process of the way life is formed and the way it's taken care of. I asked him one time, what if nobody did anything? Has it ever happened to where a planet has developed life indigenously on its own? They said, yes, it can happen. But it would be chaotic. It would not have form. It just would not have a pattern. It would not make sense. It would just be chaotic. And in such a process like that, for it to develop into an animal like we are, who is intelligent and being able to build and do different things, they said it would have taken millions of years longer just by chance to ever get to this point, if it were ever to happen, because it wouldn't be structured, it wouldn't be directed, it wouldn't be planned. And so it could happen, but he said this is not the way life works in the universe. It has to be directed. And the source is very much involved in the direction of how all of this takes. So anyway, eventually, they get to the point where the human body, and the session I just did today, before I did the show, a man went back to where he was involved in the very beginning of all of this, and he was with a group of others that came to the planet. And he said, the planet has atmosphere, that's the first thing, and the waters are there, and plants are already beginning to form. He said, all of that has been done. He said, we could have been involved in that, but that is not our job. So they had reached the point where his job was to start the creating the shells, as he called them, that would eventually become human, so that the essence, or what we call a soul, could enter into the shell to habitate it and activate it. So his job was to help with the creation of the actual shells, as he said, that would become human beings. So it was amazing that all these people that I get are all continuing the same storyline, telling me the same things. There is no contradiction in any of this. But they've told me before that the first animal that they could get to manipulate the genes and the DNA to create humans was the monkeys, because they had to have something that had a large brain capacity and also something that had hands that you could use to manipulate the hands to make tools. This was very important, so it had to be a creature that could develop hands, that could make tools, and also have a brain that could be used. So all of this had to be taken into consideration, and they decided it would be the monkeys. Now, if you trace this back, the chimpanzees, the monkeys, are 98% compatible genetically with human beings. They're that close. They say you can donate blood to a chimpanzee and he will live. That's how closely we were related. A lot of people don't like to think that we are related to them, but that is how it all began. And it was all genetically manipulated. And the genes, they were brought from many, many other places, and it was all introduced and to create the human being. All the genetic manipulations, the helping with the DNA to create a human being. And in the beginning, they were animalistic, and they had to learn. And during all of that time, the ETs were coming back again and again and again. Besides the seeders and the planters, they were also the recorders, the ones who checked on the plants and things to see which plants are surviving and which plants aren't going to make it. Which species are surviving and which species aren't going to make it. It's all a matter of record keeping. So I've had them go all the way through to where many of them were at the very beginning animal stages of animalistic stages, and then they got to where they were forming civilizations. Now, during all of this time, the ETs were coming back again and again to check on the people. When they reached the stage that they could develop further, then many of the ETs came and lived among the people to teach them things. They lived among them and taught them about agriculture, the main thing. They taught them about fire. You know, every civilization in the world has the legends of the culture bringers. Even the Indians are very much, they talk about their corn woman, the people who taught them how to plant, how to bring fire, how to do all the different steps to become a civilized group. Nobody ever just came out of the woods where they'd been hunting and you know, eating raw meat and berries and things, and all of a sudden decide, I'm going to plant food and I'm going to build a house. It never just happened like that. They had to be shown step by step from a primitive to gradually get civilized. And every culture in the world has the legends of the culture bringers. And the culture bringer always came either from the sky or from across the waters. These are the ones who taught the people, stayed with them, and they lived as long as they wanted to live. So in a lot of the civilizations, this is where the legends of the gods and the goddesses came from, were these beings that stayed and helped them and educated them. And this has come down through time. Every time they needed something in their culture, an advancement, they would be given it to them. And there's a whole lot more to this. I'm not going to have time to go into it because I could lecture on this for hours. But if you read the books, The Custodians, and I go into it more in the Convoluted Universe series too, we talk a lot more about all these different steps and how it evolved. But they're still helping today. The thing is now, because we have so many people, they can't come and live among us the way they used to. There are just too many people. So when it comes time for another invention, another advancement in the civilization to be brought about, they put it in the atmosphere so that anybody who is receptive can pick it up. And they're the ones who will invent it. They don't care who invents it. You know the stories of many people all over the world getting the same idea at the same time, and they're all working on the same invention at the same time. That's okay. They don't care who invents it as long as it is brought into the timeline it's supposed to be brought into. And that's how they operate now. Now, a lot of these people don't understand is it's an ongoing experiment. It's called the Great Experiment. And they have to see how our bodies are still developing, how we are adapting to things. A lot of the abductions, and so-called, they don't like that word. They said it's not an abduction. It's a visitation. We bring you back. But they take the person to check their cells, check their physical structures, because they're very concerned about the increase of cancer in the human race and about the different diseases we have and the effect of the pollution in the air and the additives in our food on the human body. This is what a lot of the abductions were about, were just to check the way the body is being affected and then to make corrections. The idea is to eventually remove all disease, and they do this by checking finding cures for the different diseases, and these are given to the different doctors. But it's the idea of eliminating disease and eventually doing away with death altogether. We will never die. They don't die until they're ready to die. This is the ideal situation. So they are trying to perfect the human race. That's what they said. There's no way they have taken care of us since the beginning of time. They're not about to hurt us. They're not about to let anything happen to us. It's our own stupidity that gets in the way. And one time they told me, they said, why do they say we're here to take over the world? It's ours. It always has been. And they said, we can't do anything as bad to you as you do to yourself. They've been here to take care of us since the beginning of time. Now, the other part that people argue about is what they call the breeding program and the sexual things that go on. Well, there was a breeding program going on. It was active for quite a while. They were trying to get hybrids and crossovers that could be able to communicate both with their race and our race. And this is very important for the future, if they be able to act as they called ambassadors. And these were hybrid humans and ETs. Now, there are many, many of these that are alive, and they are living everywhere. We just don't know it because we don't understand the whole process of this. In my work, I find many, many people that when they're in trance tell me they are from the stars, and this is their first time on Earth. And they don't know this consciously, but they find out these things. Also, another reason for the so-called breeding program is they are going through space still colonizing other planets. So they have to have the sperm, the ova, the cells to produce life on other places because they don't know what kind of a combination it will take to produce the ideal creature for that planet. And here again, everybody involved in these programs volunteered. They were part of it. Nothing is ever being done against their will. It's just that we don't remember these things when they come into the human body. But they said it's very important if the human race were to destroy itself, they have the sperm, the ova, the cells, they could recreate the human race all over again if it ever came to that necessity. This is very, very important. They're not here to hurt us. They're not here to destroy us. We're their children, and they've been taking care of us since the very beginning of time. And we just understand these things. It makes it so much simpler. So here I am at the end of this show the other night trying to explain some of these things, and the people are so frightened that we're calling in. The host did say, he said, "You are a breath of fresh air to hear you talking like this." He said, "I'm so tired of all the negativity and the stuff people will keep saying on the shows about how they're here to hurt us and take us over and destroy the world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." And I said, "No, it's not true, because I've dealt with this too long, and I know if you get enough people repeating the same thing over and over, it has to have validity." But he said, "You're a breath of fresh air to bring this in here and let people know so they won't be afraid." I've had people tell me after I've done a lecture, they come up to me and they'll say, "How do I get in this program?" And I said, "I don't know. I'm not in charge of that part. I don't have anything to do with that part." But most of these people volunteered, and they do, I mean, all of them volunteered, but they do families, to where they've been, it is an ongoing genetic project, and they have done. I have worked with the person, their children, their parents, their grandparents, and you'll find out it is an ongoing thing through generations of the same families, and this is the way it works. But it's much easier to understand if you just let it happen and go along with it. And I was trying to think of some other things they were saying, but most of it is just very negative, and it's just like, it's fear-based. You have to get away from fear. That's the main thing. You've got to get away from fear. I've had a couple of clients just in the last week who are talking about, "Oh, here we are at the end of the world. 2012 is the end of the world. Civilization's going down. Our world is going to be destroyed. Our country is going to pieces. This is the end of everything." All these doomsayers. And I tried to tell them, no, it is not the end of the world. It is not the end of civilization. This is the beginning of one of the most beautiful times in the history of humanity. What we're going into now is going to be absolutely beautiful. To go into the new earth. And why I'm looking forward to next week, I already voted. I'm going to be traveling on that day. I'm going to be on a plane going to Hawaii on election day. So I voted early to make sure I got my vote in there. I am fully confident, and I don't know how many other out there believe the way I do. I've spoke to other psychics. I've spoke to Gordon Michael Scallion. They are very confident that Obama will be the next president. And I get so many emails that are absolutely ridiculous. I try to answer as many of them as I can. And if I didn't get to answer yours out there, remember, I get thousands of emails. And they all wanted to know, "Oh, is Obama the Antichrist? Is he, he's here, he's an Aram, and he's here to destroy the country," and et cetera, et cetera. No, none of that is true. Absolutely none of it. He is not that. He's a decent human being who is going to try to turn this country around. And that's why the information I have gotten from the psychics, from Gordon, from my work with Nostradamus, and the people that I work with under trance are all saying this is the beginning of where we're going to turn the country around, and it's going to be positive, it's going to be beautiful. We're finally through all of this mess, and we're going to be turning the corner and going into a whole new world. It's going to be absolutely beautiful. It is not the end of the world. It is not the end of civilization. It is a beautiful beginning that is going to be quite remarkable, and you're going to be very, very proud as we go into this and see the changes that are going to happen in our world. It's absolutely wonderful. But they, the people I work with in my work, always say, don't give in to fear. That's the problem. Fear is the strongest emotion a human has. It destroys. It's a destructive emotion. It eats away at people. Don't buy into fear. If you watch TV, if you watch the news, you watch the commercials, you read the newspapers, don't buy into the fear. They said that's one thing you have to get rid of is fear in your life. Take control of your life. If you watch the news, if you read the papers, if you hear all this negative stuff, stop and think, why are they saying these things? And start thinking for yourself. Looking at it and saying, I don't know if I believe this or not. Ask questions. Ask lots and lots of questions and make up your own mind. Don't give your power away to anybody. Think for yourself. That's the most important thing you have is your own mind, your own free will. Think for yourself. Make up your own mind. Find your own truth. Your truth may not be my truth. That doesn't matter. It's your truth. Don't believe everything I say. Don't believe everything everybody else says. Think for yourself. Ask lots and lots of questions. Then make up your mind. That's the most important thing you can do. Think for yourself and don't give your power away. And I know everything is going to be wonderful. But I felt I had to go on the air tonight to try to dispute some of these negative things people were saying on the air last Sunday. I was really surprised at people living that much in fear that they think all these things are happening. And it's not true. We are living in a beautiful time. We're taken care of. We are protected. And life is, well, we have free will. Life is going to be beautiful if you just think about it. You do create your own reality. You create the world you live in. Your mind is powerful. Use it to create a wonderful future for yourselves. Okay, we're coming now to the time that I have to sign off here. And I just want to remind everybody, if you're interested in the classes, if you're interested in the lectures, or interested in sessions, check out my website, www.ozarkmt.com, or ozarkmt.com, and find out all that you need to know. I'm going to be gone for a month. I'll be back on the air the first week in December. So everyone have a nice Halloween tonight and a nice Thanksgiving, but I won't be back. And I'll see you in a month. Bye-bye, and thanks for listening.